Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Radically Distinct Radio. I'm your host, Jen Morgan, and today we're going to talk about personal branding, career transition, and the importance of diversity of thought, especially during change and crisis. Today, our guest is Raphael Seifner. I said it wrong.
Close. Raphael Seifner.
Seifner. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Sorry I butchered your last name.
You're not the first. Probably not the last.
Where are you from? Tell me. I hear your accent.
Well, I was born and raised in Germany, and over the last 10 years, moved back and forth between different European countries and the U.S.
Okay. So German. Your accent's German.
That's true.
Where, would you say German or European?
There is no European accent, I would say, due to the different languages in the different countries.
Okay. I see. Well, sometimes people say, you know, you sound like you're from the Midwest, which is kind of a group of states.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, and it speaks to intercultural awareness or their lack of when you ask people refer to you as a European. Again, there is very distinct cultural differences, including the languages. So all of there will only be very few Europeans that will refer themselves as Europeans versus German, Italian, French, whatever.
Okay. Well, who would refer to themselves as European then?
Probably people that have lived in different countries and that had to work through some of the challenges that come with the different identities. So people that really want to push for the European agenda in a way to perceive Europe as more of the United States of Europe.
Okay, I see. So you don't do that, though?
Well, I would say a European and a German, because both identities are important, and I believe they can live simultaneously next to each other.
Okay. Well, tell me, what is your personal brand? What do you think of when someone says, "What's your personal brand?" What do you say?
I would describe myself as a transformation manager, and so my goal is, and what I've been doing over the last 10 years, was to help leading teams and organizations through various transformations. And mostly I've done that in the high-tech and telco industry, but also in startups and mostly in healthcare. So whenever there is a reorganization, a new strategy that needs to be implemented, delivery models in a global context, that usually produces a lot of heat, a lot of ambiguity. And people, in most times, don't have a predefined solution how they would do that. So they bring me in to determine the most effective paths to lead through that transformation, and that's what I do. And I would say that path is usually not a straight line. It's you take two steps forward, one back at least, and it's very complex because you look at the people side, you look at the process side, the system side, usually the data side, and you need to consider all these different elements and bring them together into a cohesive story and take the people along with you. And again, that's bringing along the German, the Italian, the Greek, or for example, the Americans with all their intercultural differences and their expectations that they have about it.
Okay, so let's back up. You would consider your personal brand transformation manager. Is that what you said?
Correct.
Okay, transfer. So whether it would be an individual trying to transition from one career to another, like leadership development, sort of internal sort of things, or if it's like a big group of people that need to change the way they do things, you're a person that comes in.
Right. And the interesting thing is that I would say I started with really large corporations, so in the 250,000 people size.
Big change.
And then I've done a lot of change management for smaller companies in the 30,000 to 50,000 people range, which is still compared a lot of people, but compared to 250,000, it's really it's a big difference. And then I worked my way all the way down to startups and nonprofits. And I would say where I'm right now in my career is not to support or lead these transitions myself, but to give advice and guidance to other leaders that are in similar situations and that need to lead again, teams, organizations through these important changes.
So more of a consultant role you're doing now.
That's true.
And so what is unique about you? So I imagine there's lots of people who do, not lots, but, you know, a group of people who would say they do similar things. So what would be different about your way of managing transformation?
I would say I don't have a cookie cutter approach. A lot of people, especially when they're bringing consultants, they say like, okay, can you help me with that approach? And within 3 months, it needs to be done. I believe that if you really want to fix the underlying challenges that you have and you want to make sure the transformation lasts, you need to look holistically. And it starts with understanding who and what you're transforming. Again, there are certain intercultural things that you need to consider, certain cultural things in an organization, a lot of factors that you need to consider. And my approach is to first understand, to actively listen, and then to build a relationship with the people that you're transforming. Because you need to know where they are currently in order to determine how far can you bring them along and how much can you move them at a point in time. And that usually takes time. It takes these relationships. And then it takes a toolkit where, based on the situation, you need to take out certain tools that are right for the different environment. And I would say, and that's the art, because a lot of people have a lot of toolkits, but being able to use these toolkits in the right situation, this is where the rubber hits the road. And the other thing is, I was fortunate enough to work in really different environments cross-culturally. So I know what I'm talking about when I'm referring to what's the difference, for example, in the Greek versus German versus American versus Italian mindset. And I failed a lot throughout my career. And that means, that I can relate to things not going well, and I'm okay with that.
Okay. You're okay with things not going well, meaning the crisis, like when the crisis happens.
Yeah, when the crisis happens and you come in and you think like, wow, I'm going to go this way, and it all makes sense, and people are excited, and then you see it's not working for whatever reason, and then you need to pivot really fast and change the course of action, and also be okay with failing. It's not about failing per se, because we all fail. It's about failing fast and the lessons you take from it and, you know, how you take that lesson and hopefully share that learning with others so that they don't make the same mistake.
Okay. And so maybe tell me a little bit about one of the projects you've worked on in the past so we would, as a listener, be able to understand a little bit more, like what some, like from a public standpoint, what somebody like you does for a big group of people.
Well, you know, while we were talking about failure, so one of the things, one of the projects where to be honest, we failed in the beginning, was a restructuring of the largest Greek employer.
Greek employer?
Yeah, Greek. And you might know the Greek crisis was what was big, triggered the European crisis, a country in default, unemployment rates in the 30-50%, and just the entire country in a really, really bad state. And my job was to come in and to restructure the largest Greek employer with over 10,000 employees.
And when you say restructure, what does that mean?
That means to reduce workforce costs.
So to lay people off?
Well, that's one option that you have. And as an American, it's really simple to do that. Or in this context here, you can say, theoretically, by tomorrow, I'm going to reduce my workforce by 30%.
Okay.
When you're in Greece and most other European countries, you have the unions, and people have really strong contracts. So that easy tool is not accessible to you. And that was one of the things that we discovered. So In a situation like this, in a very unionized environment, all the tools that you have in your toolkit are saying like, well, I'm going to cut people's hours, I'm going to lay people off, whatever you do, might not be available to you. Nor as an employer might it be the great thing to do, because of course, in a situation like this, where a lot of people are producing the sole income for the family, that might not be great from an employer branding perspective. Mm-hmm. So, and that was a situation like I was sitting at the headquarters in Athens in Greece, and thinking about, okay, where can we find all these millions that we need to save? And one of the things is, like, you look through presentations, you look at financial data, HR data, whatever you do. The one thing I noticed in the morning at 9 a.m., there was loads and loads of buses coming through to the headquarters, and a lot of people getting out of those buses. And usually there is a good public transportation in Athens specifically. So I was like, what are these buses doing? Now there's like tours and stuff. And I learned the company had their personal shuttle bus system. So 100,000s of people every morning came in at 9, and the buses would pick them up at 4 p.m. And I was like, why is it that way?
And meaning the company provided bus transportation to and home. Okay.
And it had two implications. One, people can only work from 9 to 4 because otherwise they would miss the bus.
Okay.
And the other thing is it costs multi-millions to just run that bus operation that would drive through Athens. And Athens is multi-million people all across the city to pick people up where they lived.
Really?
Yes. And again, the question that I asked, like, okay, why do we have it and what's the benefit for the company, for the employees? And like in a lot of these environments, you get the answer, we've always done that. And so, I mean, what's the first thing that comes to mind for you in that situation? What would you have done?
Well, I would have said, is there other options? And just, you know, open the conversation.
Exactly. So we had said, like, is there other options? And there are other options. Public transportation is great. So I was like, simple, cut the bus system, right?
Yeah.
People might be a little upset, but, you know, let's make sure that we give them a subsidy for public transportation in Athens. Mm-hmm. And about 60-70% of the population, they lived and work in Athens. So I think it was around 10,000 people. Mm-hmm. So it's a big bus operation that you're running as a company where where commuter transportation is not core of your business. So and the idea was, okay, you say I'm going to save $5 million, let's say, to cut the bus system, and I'm going to spend another $2 million to give subsidies to people to take the light rail, to take the subway, to take the bus.
Right.
And of course, you're making some estimate how many people would pick up that subsidy, meaning these people that would take the bus, the light rail, and so on.
Right.
And, you know, and this is where we're, and that seemed to be a simple and straightforward solution. So 5 million minus 2 million, 3 million savings. It turned out that the savings were only 500,000. So the question was, why? Well, we cut the bus system, but instead of 3 million for the subsidies, we paid 4.5 million. So I looked at the data. What was going on? And what we found is that almost everyone in the company signed up for the subsidies. There was people on remote islands without a bus system that signed up for the subsidies.
Meaning that they weren't really in the city?
No, they were not in the city. They didn't even have a bus.
Okay.
But it was the idea is like, okay, it's free and I'm going to do it. The other thing I probably that was most shocking. So of course we partnered with a local management team. My job was more from headquarters, and they had a local management team. And in Greece specifically, the hierarchies are really strict. So meaning the board of directors, they had their own cars, they had 24/7 drivers. So they had these huge desks with two assistants sitting in front, so very old-fashioned hierarchical. The interesting thing is the entire board signed up for subsidies. So keep in mind, they make €500,000 at least, have a driver, have a car, 24/7 access, and sign up for the €30 subsidy. And they should be the one implementing these measures.
Okay.
So, and again, what I didn't understand is, as an American, I think, and as a German, you want to do what's right. You believe in that the authorities are, you know, that there's a good reason to pay taxes, for example, that public transportation is funded through these things, that there's limited corruption. In Greece, it's very different. That's why people didn't pay taxes, because they said, well, if I pay taxes, things don't change. If I pay taxes, you know, the next civil servant will keep that money to themselves. So a lot of bribing and stuff. So basically, the underlying assumption that I made as a what a decent citizen and what a decent person in a company would do for a common good didn't work in that context. And ultimately, due to this mistake, it basically messed up the entire business case. So we had to do, bottom line, we had to do massive auditing in that. And again, that's a good example where if I had just taken the time and brought him some more locals' perspective and saying, like, what would happen if we do that? Mm-hmm. And listen to people, how they reacted, despite of what they're saying, and build this relationship with the locals, we could have avoided some of these mistakes that were painful from a process perspective, but also from a people and financial perspective.
Okay, so that's really interesting. So would you say, so I would normally think that having somebody come in from the outside would provide, you know, a perspective that would help them see their situation in a way they haven't seen it, which is what you did do, mm-hmm. right? Do you find that having that diversity of thought is and what you're saying in your example is that was actually not so good, like it really didn't help so much?
I believe usually these transformations, they have multiple dimensions, they're very complex, mm-hmm. and there is not a simple solution, and what I did is apply a simple solution that looked good from the outside. So you usually need a team of outsiders and insiders to come together. You need to assemble them in a way that you're able to create an environment where they all feel comfortable to voice their opinion, despite, for example, hierarchies. Greek people might not speak up because they know that you're in a different hierarchical status than they are. Mm-hmm. So you need to break down these barriers, and you need to invest into creating these relationships and these communities up front. Once you then, as a community of change, transformation people, come up with a solution, vet them, test them, maybe pilot them, right? And then you move forward. So diversity is good, but you need to make sure that the diversity is applied or includes people that know these environments.
Okay. So includes people who are going to be affected by the change, that you get like the internal perspective.
Affected by the change, and then know the cultural specifics. May they be country specific, maybe the language specific, may they be specific to a certain company, or even in a team where there's a certain team culture and certain things, like we all know, you better not say.
Okay. And okay, so let's bring this all back to you. Mm-hmm. And what is it about you that makes you, obviously in that situation that was a failure, which you said you've been able to learn from your failures and then grow and develop your skill set. Well, what about you kind of gets you in these types of situations in the first place?
Well, that's a good question. I was considering myself as some kind of a failure, in a way that after I finished graduate school, I was really clear I want to work in leadership development, and I did that for a couple of years, where I designed like programs how to recruit, onboard, develop leaders, and who the leader of the future that we need, and in a very academic sense. And then, you know, one day in that $250,000 company, one of the board of directors just came by my door and asked me how things are going, and I told them in an open way how things go. And the next day I was taken out of my job, and for the upcoming 2 years was in a task force to restructure the company. And because there was obviously something I did well in that, it exposed me to the next crisis. So I felt like I go from crisis to crisis. And I thought like, okay.
Well, hold on a second. What did you say that made them put you in that situation?
Well, interestingly, there's a lot of people, I think, that are just interested in protecting their back. So as a leader, as a senior leader, especially on these large companies, you have people that provide you with the information that they think is most beneficial to their career.
Okay.
And to some kind of toned down information. And I don't know why I felt entitled, but I don't believe that hierarchy is always the best thing. And if somebody asks me an honest question, I give them an honest answer. And there were some positive aspects, and there were some aspects that were not positive. And that person, that a board member said, okay, I respect what you're saying. In 20 minutes, I need you to send me a report about what you were saying.
Oh, jeez, 20 minutes.
Yeah, and I was, sweating and said like, okay, I need to talk to my director and the vice president. And then he, you know, after they approve, I can send it to you. And he said, absolutely not. That's, I asked you and not them. And that was exactly what he wanted. He wanted to have that unfiltered information.
Okay.
And then just, you know, this coincidence changed basically the way my career pivoted for the next 10 years. And where for the longest time, again, I thought like, okay, you know, whenever something stinks and there's nobody knows what to do and there's things in crisis and transformation, I'm asked to be in there. What's wrong with me, right?
People like, call me only in crisis.
Right. You're like and again, there was then that moment, for example, in Greece, where I'm like, wow, these crises are great learning opportunities. These crises, you can really make a difference. And you know, from trying to avoid the fact to always get exposed to crisis, I transitioned to say, probably there's something that I can do, and I'm a transformation manager, and I look at crisis from a holistic perspective. Obviously, I have some resilience in the way I can deal with this, and I can create environments for people to feel safe to express their opinion
and be honest.
Yeah, and be honest. And mm-hmm. and the other thing is, I just walk the talk and fail and be able to talk about that. And that's I think something that people respect. And this is something that gives them the courage to speak up as well.
So it sounds like what's really set you apart within change management would be your truth telling.
That's one element. The truth telling and the ability to connect people. Mm-hmm. And if you combine that with the ability then to say there is a gray and a lot of dimensions and I can put it together and stitch it together in some kind of form that makes sense and that creates a story for people that they can follow along. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, is the essence of what I'm doing.
Okay. And have you, you know, transitioned? So in that particular instance that you said, you pivoted your career because you said something and somebody actually picked you up and put you in a new position. But have you since then tried to create your own career transition and take those same skills and apply them in a new way?
I do. And I have to say, being honest, like I said, in that situation and not being too afraid by hierarchies is something that came, this is who I am. This is who I am as a person. It translates in different contexts and you get a bigger scope. You lead teams yourself. You lead larger operations and organizations. But in the core is probably something that where in elementary school, I would just talk back to my teacher. So that is something that is true to who I am and what I feel really passionate about it. It's in different contexts. It's matured over time. But there are some, again, core and common that stayed the same throughout my career.
Yeah. Okay. And do you find that those same attributes show up in your personal life?
Absolutely. I believe good leaders, they walk the talk. They are authentic. And authenticity comes with the ability to have kind of when people see me, they see Raphael as a person, they see Raphael as a professional, maybe Raphael as a leader. Mm-hmm. In similar ways where, for example, honesty and a lot of other things are the same. And you know, keep in mind that people usually have a more polished outlook, a polished appearance during professional in their professional life. But in crisis, you know, you see people crying and you see a lot of people being in stress. What does it mean for me? If I'm going to lose my job, it's not just me as a professional, but what does it mean for my family? So, again, you have to look at that personal level anyways. And I think you have to be authentic in all these ways. And I would say there is quite a few things that apply in a professional life and transformation management, and they apply in personal life as well.
Well, since you are an expert in managing crisis, do you think that you could give us a few tips on how, you know, if we're going through a challenging time, we might, you know, maybe three things from Raphael on how we can manage crisis?
Well, I don't know if I'm the expert on personal crisis management, but here I would say are three things that help me in my personal and professional life. The one thing I think is important. You know, there is an interesting picture about an oxygen mask. So if you're in an airplane, you might have seen that picture. Before you give the oxygen mask to others, make sure that you have it yourself. Mm-hmm. That basically means make sure that you're okay. Before I go in crisis or I go in transformations, I need to make sure that my house, my own house, is in order. If I have unresolved things, then, let's say there is a breakup of a relationship. Right? Prior to going to the next relationship, make sure that you reflect. Like, what was my role in that? Like, what did I want? Why did it not work? And get that cleaned up in the way that you're clear about that you close it out, but also that you're clear about what you want next. So that's and again, the more that is cleaned up, the more resiliency, the more openness, the more capacity you have to take on the issues from other people. The next thing I would say, probably in personal challenge situations as well as professionals, you have to have relationships to people that have been built prior to the crisis. Like again, let's use that relationship the breakup example where. You know, once you break up, you call your best friend, right? And that is something that you probably invested and nurtured over time. And so similar in these crises, like in Greece, again, if I had that group of people that were trusted me, that were giving me the honest feedback, that were in there with me, right? They would have given me that advice that probably would have prevented some of the mistakes.
Okay. Those are really, I think everybody could relate to those, you know, needing to make sure that you personally are, those would be preparing before you have a crisis. But what if you find yourself, you know, in the heat of crisis, such as maybe I don't have a great strong network and now I'm going through, I lost my job and I don't have a really strong network. I got to find a new job. I'm emotionally a disaster. What would you recommend that I do?
Take a deep breath. I mean, it sounds funny, but you know, there's these crises that impact all of us, mm-hmm. and take the time to grieve. Treat yourself if it's like you know, splurging on pizza and or you know, go out and you know, go partying somewhere or if it's going for a long run something. There are things that make us happy. So if you know these spots that bring you back to you know thinking clearly, like invest in that time. And the other thing is, I would say don't go for the next day searching for a new job. Take that time to grieve about a relationship that's broken up, about a job that you lost, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But then I would say, again, reflect on, you know, what was the reason that I lost that job? Was it really the job that made me happy? Right? And listen, and then there are some strategic things. You can do some analysis. What kind of money do I want to make? And all these things. But also, if you have cleaned up your inside of you and then you're clear on what you want, there's a gut feeling. And then I would say, try out some things. Like, go to as many in the job situation, go to as many job interviews as you can. Try different things. Maybe if after the breakup, you know, date various people. Just see what's out there. Mm-hmm. And again, there will be certain instincts and a certain gut feeling that might lead you in the right direction. It's and the other thing is, there might be things where you think a job interview went well, you don't get the job, or you think a date went well and it doesn't work out, and ultimately, be okay with that. These are all learning moments, and they might pivot you and take you one step closer where you want to be. And it might not make sense in the moment, but once you get there, you find that dream job, you find that dream partner, that might be the moment when you look back and say, like, oh yeah, that all made sense and all led to this one moment.
All right. So what I'm getting from you about your personal brand is, you know, you're a transformation manager. You're really great at truth telling. That's one thing that's different about you, amongst others. Another thing that you're really great at is connecting people. And another thing is, it sounds like, you know, comfortable exploring and making a mess. Because I think we oftentimes when we have to change, that doing it wrong or making the wrong choice or something that's the wrong thing or the exact same thing is paralyzes us from moving forward.
Well, exactly. And then, and I think there's the one thing about failing. It's okay to fail because we all fail. And this is probably when we all learn the most.
Like kids when they're learning to walk, right?
Exactly. And a kid has also, the other thing that a kid does, they don't look at the end point necessarily, but they're in there for the journey. You know, now job searching is not, or maybe even dating might not be the most fun things, but try to not think about the dream partner that you want to find, but enjoy each date and see the fun of it. So again, these crisis transformations, they are serious, but there is a lot of fun things in it, and trying to find the fun in these things and you know, enjoy the ride.
All right. Well, I have really appreciated your insight on personal branding and crisis management. And thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. I had lots of fun.
A strategy is based on a premise. And a premise is a set of assumptions or beliefs. To create an effective strategy, you need to start with who are the participants. For example, a basketball coach, he may want to have his team watch tapes of an opponent team in order to get a feel for their upcoming rivals and then to work together to formulate a plan that is in relationship to the team that they're about to play and not just a bunch of strategies that they learned in a vacuum cleaner. Just as it's important to know the other participants in a strategy, it's as important to know who you are. Because just as Raphael was saying, as a German or as an American, I want to do what's right. Well, we all want to do what's right. But what's right for me is different than what is right for you. And that changes socially, culturally, and aesthetically, depending on what your experience is and where your background is. And so oftentimes, initial strategies have flaws because there's information that was hard to predict or things that were so obvious to people who weren't involved. But because they're so far foreign to us, we miss them completely. When you're having an understanding of who you are and what you bring to the table and the assumptions that guide your decisions, which is to know your personal brand, when you're clarity about what that is, you are more capable to show up to a situation and formulate a strategy that plays to your strengths because you're accounting for the fact that you are different than other people. And they will have different reactions and responses than you are. And when they do, you're more present to be able to engage with them, learn from the information that you're getting back, and adjust your approach. You can tell that Raphael is an excellent strategist and an effective leader because of his willingness to look at his mistakes and learn from them, and then use that information to shape his path moving forward. And that's radically distinct. Hey, this is Jen Morgan. I want to empower you to be radically distinct. And there are many ways for us to work together. Whether you're an individual working on your career path or your life status, or you're a team or an organization, get a hold of me, jenmorgan.com. That's Jen with two N's, morgan.com. Email me, j@jenmorgan.com, and follow the show on Instagram and Facebook @radicallydistinct.